to episode 3. We're continuing on today with our theme of queerness in magic. And I mean, really, that's the theme for the whole podcast, but that's what we're focusing on right now.
While we are both passionate about intersectionality and being inclusive of all experiences, we both have a fair amount of privileges, and so we may and probably will mess up every now and then. Please do not hesitate to message us if you notice anything. We're always happy to get pointers and corrections. Also, magic is such a varied and often personal thing, and so not everything we say will work with everyone's practice. So feel free to take what feels right to you and leave the rest behind. One of the things that we really wanted to talk about is a focus within a lot of magical practices on the sort of binary between masculine and feminine energy. And this is really prevalent in a lot of different facets of magic. Like, I see it all of the time in astrology. It's really everywhere. People talk about Venus is feminine and Mars is masculine. Mm. And then also, if you go, like, most pages that offer astrological charts, will ask whether you're male or female.
Yeah.
And even, like, I use astro.com a lot because they have really great charts and really great information. However, you have to sign up for male or female, or have it be an event or other. And if you sign up for that, there are some interpretations of the chart that you can't access.
Okay.
You can only access it with male or female charts. Oh, basically, okay. it's like quick interpretations, which I find really useful sometimes to get like just a quick look at things instead of having to do all the work myself, basically. Mm. And it's really annoying because there is no difference to your chart.
Yeah.
Whether, like, whichever gender you are, obviously society will have an effect.
Yeah.
Like, patriarchy will have an effect. Men are brought up in a completely different way than women in so many ways.
Yeah.
So yeah, that will have an effect, but what if you're a trans woman who was raised in a male clitoris?
Oh my god, I don't even know. I love find the English word, even though it's my native language, it's still really difficult
yeah.
for me.
No, I know.
Structure, but not...
role.
Okay, yeah.
But what if you're a trans woman, for example, who's brought up in a masculine role, like, all her life, and then comes out as trans and starts living her own life later in life, like when she's 35, 40 or something, and she's already grown up. She was then brought up. I'm not saying that she won't experience misogyny, because she will, because, you know, she knows who she is. However, society will have treated her as male, and that will have an effect. So surely there should be an option to tick for that when you're looking at an astrological chart. Mm. Like, if there's such a big difference in how people are reading the charts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I find it really annoying. And it also speaks, like, a lot of astrology would be like, oh, if this planet is in this house, it means that your father was this and this and that, or that your mother was this and this and that.
Yeah.
When actually, what you should be saying is, when we speak of the father, we are often speaking about the more emotionally distant parent, the less nurturing, and also a sort of role model that the child will have looked up to as a sort of pillar of strength and whatever.
Like someone who fits this archetype, not necessarily it's an archetype. Biological father.
Yeah, exactly. And then when we speak about the mother, we speak about the more nurturing person who is more close emotionally and who maybe spent more time with the child.
Yeah.
Than the other. And sometimes, like, those archetypes don't fit at all. I mean, let alone the fact that not everybody has a father and a mother when they're growing up. Some may have two mothers or two fathers, and, you know, there's all kinds of different family models. It also just reinforces this stereotype that, you know, women should be at home looking after the kids, not working, and the father should be emotionally distant, not in touch with any of his emotions.
Just going and winning the bread.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just like, ugh, these stereotypes are so damaging.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's, yeah, one thing that I have thought about quite a bit recently is, like, especially when you're talking about Mars and Venus as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, yes, like, Venus is the feminine planet of da-da-da, but, like, is it... I mean, yeah, like, to look at Venus and the name Venus and the goddess Venus and to associate that all together, it's like, okay, yeah, like mythologically,
yeah,
these parallels can be drawn. But when you're talking about loving receptive energies,
being emotionally present,
yeah, things like that, it's like
beautiful aesthetics,
yeah, that doesn't have to be assigned a gender whatsoever. You can just say, like, and especially with Mars as well, it's like masculine, Mars
being more projective energy, yeah, sort of outwards, sometimes aggression but not always.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, Mars was the god of war, and Mars can be a very explosive planet sometimes, yeah, because it is very like out there,
yeah,
and visible sort of projective energy. Mm. But yeah, it doesn't always have to be.
Just more like assertiveness.
Assertiveness.
Yeah. And to maybe change up the, like, to instead of feminine energy, to say, I don't know, nurturing energy, and instead of masculine energy, to say
I often use receptive and projective.
Yeah.
But also, like, it depends on what you're talking about. Sometimes you are actually talking about nurturing energy.
Yeah.
And sometimes you are talking about aggressive energy. Yeah. And it's like, no, just say what you actually mean.
Exactly. It's a stress. And even, like, yeah, even for with, well, with gods and goddesses is one thing. Like, a lot of, I mean, I mostly know queer witches. So it's, I can't speak for lots of straight cis male witches, but like, I've not really met anyone who has such a strong connection to Mars, or to Aries, or male war gods. I mean, besides Odin, but then Odin has so many other different aspects that it's not just like, you know. So,
I mean, Thor, I guess.
Yeah.
But
I mean, but then I've also met, like, I've met a lot of queer people who have a strong connection to maybe the Morrigan or like a war goddess, which makes so much more sense. And I mean, like Ishtar as well, but like Athena, like knowledge, but also like a strong female role, and Artemis is the hunter, and things that are not, you don't look at and think, yeah, masculine, but you look at and you think, like, okay, this is, they have this strong energy and they have this assertiveness and they have all these things that are typically thought of as masculine, when, like, why can't we just do away with all the gender attachments? Why can't we just be like, because, you know, you can meet, doesn't matter who you are, you can be an assertive person, or you can be a nurturing, receptive person, or a quiet person, or whatever. It's like, it's just a trait. It doesn't need to have a gender assigned to it.
And it doesn't need to encompass so many things.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's really, like, sure, it's really easy to be able to be like, oh, well, instead of giving you a 5-minute speech, I might just say masculine energy, and you'll probably know what I mean.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And I want to add, actually, that apparently in ancient Greece, there were no temples to Ares, and there were no temples to Mars, because they would be called on for a battle, but you wouldn't want to, like, call on them for anything else, basically.
Okay, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
So that makes sense why a lot of people, like, most people wouldn't want to connect with that sort of forceful energy, because, I mean, it's not that nice.
And we're living in a time of relative peace, like, fingers crossed for, like,
relative peace in our part of the world.
Yeah, exactly. So. My music this month is Ivor, and I always pronounce her name as Eivor, because that's how you would
in Icelandic. I did as well.
Yeah, and I mean, her name is, her name in Icelandic would be Eivor, Eivor Pálsdóttir, but then in Faroese it's Ivor
Pálsdóttir.
Yeah. I don't know how you say the last name.
I don't know what she prefers.
Faroese, but she's fantastic. I think she's known quite, like, by a lot of nerdy, gamey people like me, because she did the music. Well, she did the vocals for the soundtrack, the new soundtrack for the newest God of War game. Mm. And she was amazing in that. She, like, if you type in, like, on YouTube, like, mystical Nordic music, she'll be, like, one of the first people to come up. But yeah, she's amazing. Her vocalizations are really cool. Her voice is, like, enchanting. Mm-hmm. And, like, and so powerful. Yeah, like, just sort of sucks you in. She also worked on the soundtrack for The Last Kingdom, I don't know if it was BBC, it was definitely shown on the BBC in the UK. I think it's on Netflix now, but it's like one of these Viking-y TV shows. But she did, like, the whole soundtrack for that, with a composer as well, and that was really good. I've not seen the whole show, but all of the music is really good. I listen to it quite a lot. And there's one song actually by her, which is like, because it's written, I would read it in Icelandic as like Lífsþræðir.
Lífsþræðir.
Yeah. But I don't know how, I mean, I don't know whether she's writing that in like Icelandic or Faroese or anything else, because, But that's one of my favourite songs, because it's just, it's calm, it's soothing, it draws you in, but it's also, I don't know, it's, you can just imagine you're in some sort of like old, like stone hut, and there's like a big fire and smoke and like very Anglo-Saxon people dancing around, and
totally,
it's very much
a lot of the lyrics are also very much about like the forces of nature and the power of like wind or sea or something like that. It's very like, and it trolls. Calls up all these images and trolls and all these folklore connections. It's really cool. For music this month, I wanted to mention Ibeyi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's spelled I-B-E-Y-I. And it's a Yoruba word that means twins. So Ibeyi is twin sisters of Afro-French Cuban descent. And it's a sort of like experimental kind of trip-hop, kind of soulful music, and like they do a lot of really beautiful vocalizations together. There's a lot of like, a lot of the tracks will have like very minimal instruments, so it'll be like mostly voices and then maybe like drums or like very like minimal instrumental parts basically. And they sing like, they mostly grew up in France with heavy ties to Cuba. So they sing in English, French, Spanish, and Yoruba.
Nice.
And like a lot of their lyrics are very spiritual, feminist as well.
Nice.
And yeah, really, really beautiful.
So we also wanted to talk about shamanism and, well, drag and queerness within that.
Yeah, and shamanism is like a problematic term in many ways because it's been sort of applied for a lot of very, very different things by colonialist historians, basically. But a lot of shaman traditions around the world will share a lot of very important factors. Certainly, I mean, I think the basic factor of being a shaman in most cultures that I've read about, at least, is the ability to go to a sort of liminal space and hold a space that nobody else can.
Yeah.
Like, whether that is, you know, traveling into the spirit world or, you know, having a near-death experience and coming back from that. But also in many cultures, being queer has been that sort of liminal space.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. With well, there was actually a quote. Literally, I have no idea how to pronounce his name. I think it's Brivolt. It turns out pretty homophobic. But the first male shamans imitated women by taking on their role and wearing their clothes, and that makes sense because, you know, if I mean, like, it's also a, like a very binary way of looking at things of like women
of course
have this role and men have this role, but it's like, if it were that women were performing these sort of roles more frequently in the past, you know, it would make perfect sense then
for, I mean, like a shamanistic role,
would make perfect sense then for a man to be like, okay, to get to this place I need to achieve some sort of similarity with this, so maybe I need to wear this item of like ritual clothing, or I need to whatever. But it's also like, it's also people, historians looking back at that being like, yes, this was a man in a dress, and it's like, what? No, like, this was a man in a ritual piece of clothing that, you know, maybe didn't have any sort of gender attached to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because it's a shamans bit of fabric. Were often, so like,
shamans often held a sort of gender identity that was outside of the regular binary of the group that they were in.
Yeah.
Like, there were men and women, and then there were shamans. Like, they were a completely different thing. And, like, often, in many cultures and in many instances, that does mean that the shaman was in some way able to either perform or take on the role of either male or female.
Yeah.
Sometimes both at the same time, but sometimes they would like have a few weeks where they would sort of perform feminine, air quotes, tasks, and then other weeks where they would perform masculine tasks.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was important because usually there was just one shaman and they would have to be able to represent every single person in the community. Mm. So, yeah.
Especially for that sort of healing as well. With spirit work and healing in that respect, it's like you would need... Well, I mean, for lots of people who have done spirit work, it's pretty clear when you get to different levels and different astral... whatever, that it's like gender literally does not mean a thing in this state. I mean, even like within the Norse cosmological view and the fetch, having like an animal aspect and then an aspect of being someone that, well, a few writings on the fetch that I've read have been like, yes, so the fetch has an animal aspect and then an aspect that's humanoid in appearance but of the opposite gender to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there being like a sort of super conscious version of this as well.
Mm-hmm. Sort of trinity.
Yeah, which is like everything.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's the only issue that I would have with that is being like, but then why is my fetch the opposite gender to me? Because, I mean, if it's your own personal view and it, like, I don't know, so if, like, yes, I am a cis male, and so then my fetch going by this view would maybe be, like a cis female, but like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But then what would mine be?
Exactly, yeah. So it's like,
And I mean, I have definitely some sort of spiritual guide that there is an animal aspect and a spiritual aspect, and the animal aspect is more, air quotes again, masculine, and the spiritual aspect is more feminine, but then
we should just use these other words to describe it instead of that, for sure. And I mean, definitely there's things of like, I don't know,
I say that, but it's like, it's just, I use he pronouns for one of them and she pronouns for the other. It's like, I don't know, I think they're both just as sort of gender queer and gender fluid as me.
Yeah,
I don't think gender matters to them.
I think if you're a spirit, I mean, without a physical body, it's like, of course, it's like it's completely irrelevant anymore. And that's why when you're journeying as well, it's like when you're taking, especially if you're doing Sailor or something else and you're taking on like a form of an animal as a way of traveling. Going into a
trance state.
And it's like...
Which is another liminal space.
Yeah, exactly. And like, to be in a liminal space completely does away with gender in my experience anyway, personally, in my opinion.
Yeah, and so I mean, obviously we're going to project a lot of our own ideas about gender. So if you are like... If your life is very much coloured by the sort of binary gendered way of thinking, then it might come through in the spirit world. But I think for most people it wouldn't.
Yeah, for sure.
So for this podcast, I actually found some scans I made from a book back when I was in university. Because I was studying shamans and I found this book called The Quest for the Shaman by Miranda and Stephen Althaus Green. And I... loved that book. I kept it from the library probably for like 4 months. And then I ended up like, I want to keep it even longer, but I really, really can't because someone has requested it. So I actually scanned like over 60 pages from that book just to keep. And I found it the other day. Really, really good book about shamanism. And it does include, I mean, from a very sort of cishet colonialist historian perspective, for sure, but it's also pretty inclusive, and it's a few years old, obviously, so for that, I think it's really, really good, because it does talk about gender and sort of gender nonconformity for shamans. And I wanted to just read this really good quote, and it does come with a warning of sort of very... cis biological language. But they say, gender lies at the very roots of personhood, of human identity. So denial of one's biological birth gender frees one from the constraints of normal behavior, and any expression of gender disturbance may signify the threshold situation of the ritualist, divided between human and spirit dimensions, profane and sacred. Gender transference may equally serve to express the dangerous power of the shaman who, by access to all layers of the cosmos, was able to manipulate the supernatural forces for good or for evil.
Nice.
And I think that's a really good description of why and how gender and sort of using gender as a way of reaching shamanic trans states or shamanic titles or roles in society is a, it's such a widespread thing, because like I say, like, you can find evidence of these across the world in really ancient cultures.
I love it even today. So a friend of mine who was living in Iceland, he's now moved to America. He was before, he was a drag artist performing a lot. Death Star, did you ever? So, I mean, Neville, he's brilliant. His whole thing for a while was like drag shaman, taking inspiration from, you know, pre-Christian sources, and using that for performance art that talked about gender and about negative emotions relating to gender expression, gender identity, and all of this stuff. And like, I mean, his performances were amazing anyway, fantastic dancer, and like just really entertaining to watch. But yeah, I mean, even like he, like, as just one modern example, took this mantle, I guess, of like drag shaman and actually made commentary on queerness and gender and gender binary and things through performance art like this. But I mean, he is also very into witchy stuff as well, and he does have a knowledge of that. So it's, I don't know, it's interesting to see that there's still, although yes, he's not a, like a practitioner of a native shamanic tradition, he is taking inspiration from that and performing in a very like modern way. And I think it's interesting still that, like, obviously, like, for me to see that now and be like, okay, this is happening now, this absolutely something similar. I mean, not, well, if you change performance for ritual, then it's like something similar like this was obviously, there's no doubt that this would have been happening in lots of different cultures all over the world for a long period of time.
Exactly.
So it's really interesting that there's that like modern parallel now as well. But I mean, as one example, I'm sure there's so many other people who do a similar thing, so...
I think, I mean, I just want to recommend as well, like, there's an episode of the podcast Witch Wave. It's episode number 14, I think. I think I've written that down correctly. But it's an episode where she interviews a drag artist who really, like, embodies this sort of shamanic performance. I really recommend that whole episode. I could talk about it for ages, but I really recommend it. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Nice.
And they talk about drag queens as queer community storytellers, soothsayers, and healers.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful.
It makes sense, for sure. Yeah. It's
like a mixture of the bard and the shaman. It's,
Even as D&D rolls, it definitely works.
I also want just to give people a heads up, I guess, that Mercury will be going retrograde very soon. And actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it has already started its shadow period, as it's called. And just to explain a little bit, I know a lot of people have, you know, read some stuff about Mercury retrograde, and it's become like one of the best known transits or things in astrology that, like, and people tend to like exaggerate a lot. So the main thing about Mercury, so Mercury is the planet of communication, and as such it tends to control like a lot of technological stuff, also transit, any kind of travel, and just like computers and phones and all of those things, because those are like based on messages, you know, whether between people or between servers and computers and etc etc. So, and a retrograde is basically because Earth is moving and all the planets are moving as well. The planets, like, in the sky, they don't just go in, like, a circle. It's a lot more complicated than that. And every now and then, the planets will have a retrograde motion. And this is something that pretty much all the planets do. So from our viewpoint on Earth, it looks as though the planet is going backwards, but it's kind of like if you're on a train, for example, and you're stopped at a train station, and So you're in the train of Earth. and then your train starts moving, but then another train, which is Mercury, starts like rushing by.
Yeah.
It looks as though to you like that train is going backwards because of this optical illusion. It's not actually going backwards or anything. It's just, but the thing is, it goes back through the signs from our viewpoint. So for example, if a planet starts going retrograde at the beginning of Pisces, it may retrograde back to going into Aquarius, and then it will start going forward again and go through Pisces again. So it's like a bit repetitive sometimes, and it's like it can drag up a lot of stuff from the past, etc. And this February and the beginning of March, Mercury will be retrograde in Pisces, and we'll be going into Aquarius at the start of March. So it's February 16th or 17th, depending on where you are in the world. That's when Mercury will station retrograde, and that's like
the beginning.
Yes, the beginning of all your worst fears come to life. No, just kidding. Actually, apparently it will be a fairly smooth Mercury retrograde, but it will be like pretty classic. Like, so if you're starting a venture, if you're going to be signing a contract, if you're booking travel, if you're traveling, etc., like, be prepared for delays.
Yeah.
Like, it's very likely that something will go wrong. And it's not like, I'm not saying that anything like horrible will happen. It's just that, you know, your flight will be delayed by an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
Or like your train will be delayed and then you miss the connecting train or something, you know. So just be very prepared that things might take a little bit longer than usual. And actually, Mercury went retrograde through Pisces last year at around the same time. So you can kind of look back to last year, sort of late February to beginning of March, and just think, like, did Mercury affect me back then? So how did it, what happened? And then maybe expect something in a similar vein this year.
Nice.
But obviously, it affects everyone differently, depending on what's going on in our birth charts. But yeah, 2nd of February, that's when it will sort of start slowing down, and that's called the shadow period. So from the 2nd to the 17th or 16th, it's going to be slowing down until it stations retrograde, and that's when it stops, or yeah, quote-unquote stops, and then it starts moving backwards. And sometimes you can kind of see, like, be very attentive to what's going on around the 2nd of February, because that is something that might come back up in during the retrograde period and after the retrograde period. So, yeah.
So my herb of the month is stinging nettle. It's very full of minerals. It's one of these plants that sort of soaks up all the stuff around it. And it's been seen as a weed for a while now, which, you know, I don't agree with that. I don't think any plants are weeds. I think you should be able to move things around your garden in a way that you want, but like, not, there's no plants that are necessarily worse than others. Everything has their use, whether we found it yet or not. They're a good general health tonic. Normally, I mean, people would drink like strong nettle tea as a spring tonic and a winter tonic, I guess, as well. But I know people who drink nettle tea almost every day. But yeah, the tea is, I mean, with lots of hot leaf juice, like, there's a similar planty taste. And I mean, obviously you get bitter herbs and things like that, but some people, nettle has a bit of a sort of meatier, umaminess to it.
Almost milky.
Yeah, it's like this weird, like, I don't know, it feels heavier than lots of other herbs, lots of other herbal teas, but it's good. It does you good, and you definitely, like, it's definitely a taste that you enjoy after a while, even if you don't at first. But magically, Well, Cunningham, Scott Cunningham, in his Encyclopedia of Magical Herbs, says one use for nettle is removing and reversing hexes, and he recommends stuffing a poppet full of nettles, and a poppet being what many people think of as a voodoo doll,
yeah.
Like a human shape, normally made of cloth that you will sew together and fill with various herbs and things, and used a lot in a lot of different traditions. Yeah, he doesn't really say exactly what to do with it, but I'm guessing as it's to remove or reverse a curse, like if you're going by sympathetic magic, maybe create this poppet and then set it adrift. But I guess you could, well, maybe you could just dunk it in the water and hold it in the river and let the water wash away the curse. But if you're going to use it in that way, I would suggest that you make the poppet look as much like yourself as you can, maybe sew some of your hair into it or something to really personalize it before you do that. And then also, nettle and yarrow carry together is supposed to allay fear, which is good to know, because every now and again the darkness scares me, so it's nice to know that things I have in the garden are useful low against anxiety. That. Yeah. And then also, fresh cut nettles beneath a sick bed are said to aid in recovery. And I can see that being quite a good use. There's like, I mean, as it's like a super healthy plant, there's definitely a lot of good that comes from nettles. So it's a strong, I mean, sympathetically as well, like it stings you. It's like a strong protective vibe. Anything thorny, spiky, stingy, whatever is going to do good for works of protection and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense.
My herb of the month is a eucalyptus. It's such a strong herb, like the smell of it is just incredible. I have some eucalyptus oil at home, and when I'm feeling like tired or if I'm having difficulty like waking up, I'll just go and like sniff the oil. Like put it in front of my nose and just like
huff the eucalyptus.
It just really wakes me up. I love it, but I can't use it really, because eucalyptus is really toxic to cats and dogs.
Okay, I didn't know that.
So a lot of plants are, and a lot of oils and incenses are. So always be careful with if you have an animal companion at home. So I have a cat, so I can't really, like, I can't use the oil really, except for like
personal huffs.
Just sniff it. It's my cocaine. No, but it's so like, it just, it cleanses everything, and it's really good for asthma and fever and bronchitis, like all of those sort of where you're having trouble breathing or when your nose is stuffy. It's really good. You can also like put it in a pot of water and boil it, maybe with some lemon, and then like put a wet towel on top of it and just like breathe in the fumes. It also cleanses your environment. It's an insect repellent, very useful in Iceland, where we have hardly any insects. And you can use it as a herbal amulet or anointing oil. Like just put a bit of oil on your wrists or your temples, and it can strengthen you and it can clear away illnesses. It also makes you more receptive to energy, which can be a good or a bad thing, depending how receptive you usually are. And also, it can be toxic in large doses, even to humans. So always be very careful with eucalyptus. It's not a poison, but it's still like, it can be dangerous both to you and others around you. And it's also antiseptic and antimicrobial.
Nice.
So it's just super cleansing.
So thanks for tuning in again. We have got so much like positive feedback from this, and we're like amazed that, I mean, already just from the second episode, like there were like 235 listens, which is mental. Especially for a podcast in Iceland that's about such a niche subject. It's like, yeah, it's crazy. It's so incredible. We're super happy and super grateful and super ready to just put out more stuff for you guys. So yeah, thank you for listening to our third episode. We've got a little bit to plug.
Yeah.
If you're in the area. But yeah, so I offered a short while ago, I offered like a little introductory Sigils 101 class discussion. And I mean, we're thinking to do more of these sort of things, especially like the group, the circle that we're sort of working with. We're thinking about hopefully putting out a few different things. And so, yeah, what I will say is keep an eye out on our Facebook page if you're looking for more witchy woo in Iceland. We're thinking of just doing a like a broad like set of talks on different subjects, correspondence and tarot and astrology and runes and various things, but just like a beginner's crash course sort of thing. So yeah, so keep an eye out for that, and we'll keep you guys posted. But yeah, we're super grateful. And also thanks again to Nornagal
Yes.
for letting us use your amazing song.
Yes.
And yeah, you can find links to them as well. Everything will be in the notes. So
Yes. Check
thank
those
you.
out. Give us a rating if you're listening in a place where it has rating systems,
Yeah.
because apparently that helps a lot. Give us a like on Facebook and a follow on Instagram, etc., etc. Yeah.